سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، إن الدين عند الله الإسلام. صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
The subject of our discussion is understanding Islam. And yesterday we went through the different stages of and different places where we need to understand Islam. Today, let me just go into the subject. And we see that the understanding of Islam has come through different means. People have understood Islam through different means, and because of these different means that Muslims understood Islam, hence the differences arose amongst Muslims themselves. And the differences we have is because the means through which we understood Islam are different. In all, there are three means by which Muslims understood Islam. And all these three are different from one another. The first means by which Muslims understood Islam is through rulers, kings, and emperors. This was a means by which they understood Islam. The second means that the Muslims understood Islam was by the means of scholars and intellectuals, people who were learned, thinkers, philosophers. And then the third means by which Islam is understood is through the prophets, the imams, and those who came from Allah. And all these three have different characteristics, different traits. Their Islam also became different in its character, in its qualities, and how it presented itself. And for us to see, it is important to see what are the effects and the impact and the influence of these three understandings of Islam, those three means of understanding on the ideologies of Muslims, and how they influenced the Muslims in the thinking that they had. Please recite the salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
One more salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Muhammad wa ali Muhammad salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
These are three means by which Islam is understood. Now we will see that they all have a different flavor, they all have a different character for one another. Now, when we see the first means, which is the means of rulers and emperors and kings, through whom Muslims understood Islam. You see, rulers and kings have certain characteristics that is common in all of them, whether they are Muslim or not. Whether they're a Muslim or not, you'll see that they have certain traits that are unique to them. And in order to understand the Islam that came from them, we need to understand these characteristics also. So the first one of the important ones, a trait that all rulers and kings have, and people in power, the state, they have, is that they hold everyone else accountable for their actions, but they don't hold themselves accountable for their own actions. You see that? This is the first trait. They hold everyone responsible for what they do, but they don't want to be held responsible from anyone else. They will tell you what to do, and they will hold you responsible for it, but they don't want you to tell them what to do and hold them responsible for it. This is the first trait of those who are kings and rulers. And you see, the Islam that was understood from these kings and rulers, these emperors who taught this brand of Islam to the people, that Islam also has this flavor, that it holds everyone else responsible, but the leaders of that Islam do not want others to hold them responsible for what they do. In other words, you see, everyone else is accountable, but I am not accountable because I'm the leader. So I hold you accountable for your actions. If you do something wrong, I will punish you. But if I do something wrong, then I have my ulama who are going to justify that what I am doing is right. You see that? This is one of the traits. And when we compare that, this attribute, this quality, when we look at that quality and compare it to the Prophet of Allah, then we see that in the Prophets and the Imams, we saw another character in the same regard. Those who came from Allah, they showed the character of holding themselves accountable before they hold others accountable. They held themselves responsible for their actions before they held others responsible for their actions. And when we saw the life of the Prophet, we saw the same, this very thing. Look at the Prophet and you will see that he would do things before he would ask others to do them. he would hold himself accountable before he held others accountable. And this was that prophet who used to pray the whole night, and the whole night he used to pass in prayer. He used to stand up for such a length of time before Allah, for such a length of time before Allah, that his feet, his toes used to bleed. His toes used to bleed, and he would not notice the bleeding in his toes. He used to stand before Allah, and then he did it so much that Allah had to stop him and say, Taha, wama anzalna alayka al-Qur'ana litashka. O Muhammad, we have not revealed the Qur'an so it can be a burden on you, that you make it hard on yourself. And you see, this was the character of the Prophet and the prophetic character, that when he came out, he prayed the whole night, and then he asked his ummah to pray 17 rakat. You see that? This is the character of the Prophet, that he would do things more than others, and he would do it before others and hold himself responsible. And when we compare this character to the character of those who are kings and emperors, you will see what a vast difference this is. On one hand, you saw the Prophet and the Imams, when they stood before Allah, they were shaking and shivering with fear. So this fear and humility is the sign of those leaders who follow the example of the Prophet and the prophetic character. And those who will hold others responsible, but they don't want anyone to hold them responsible, this is the Islam that is learned through those rulers and kings. So this is the first characteristic of those who are rulers. Now the next characteristic, and this is very important to understand, is that rulers and kings want you and their subjects to sacrifice their lives, but they don't want to sacrifice their own life. See, they know how to ask people to sacrifice their life for their kingdom, but they don't want to sacrifice themselves for the state or their power. See, if I'm a leader, if I'm a ruler, if my kingdom is in jeopardy, so I tell you, go and sacrifice your life so you can save my kingdom. If you love your kingdom, why don't you sacrifice yourself? But if he does, then what's the use of his kingdom? I mean, he made a kingdom, palace. What's the use of this big home that he has built, these mansions that he has built? What's the use of all those harems that he had built? I mean, if he's not alive, he can't use them. So obviously, he's not going to sacrifice himself. He wants others to sacrifice. This is the character of that Islam which has been learned through these rulers and these kings, that they want others to sacrifice, but they are not ready to sacrifice themselves. And when we look at now the character and the traits of those who came from Allah, we see that they in their lives have shown, whether others want to sacrifice or not, they would be the first one to sacrifice. Whether others want to give their lives or not for the movement, they will be the first one to be there and the last one to be there in order to sacrifice. You see, this, my brothers, understand this example that I'm giving. When we saw that, what is the character of that Islam that the Prophet brought? That was not that he asked others to sacrifice their lives for Islam, but when his time came, you know, he was the last one to be there. No. You see that?
Prophet's stand and his character in this regard became known in Uhud. The stand that the Prophet made in the Battle of Uhud was such that all his soldiers had ran away. Those who had swords, those who had horses, those who had weapons, they all ran away. And the Prophet stood alone. You see, he did not run. If he was a ruler who saw his army is running away, he would say, "Why am I here? Let me get out of here also. I'll come back to fight another day." But the Prophet is teaching us, whether my soldiers leave or not, I will be there and I will sacrifice my life for this deen. You see, brothers, understand the stand the Prophet made in Uhud. When we speak of the Battle of Uhud, we speak of Imam Ali and his remarkable efforts. But we don't understand one thing, that his efforts were not because of Ali. Ali's efforts were because of the Prophet. You see, before Ali took a stand, Prophet made the stand before Ali did anything else. It was the Prophet who took the stand. When everyone ran, when everyone was running away and the army was defeated, the enemies were there. You see, the stand of the Prophet in Uhud was such a stand that in all of history, you will not see a leader who made such a stand. And his stand was such that it inspired the few who came back to help him. You see, when he stood there in the Battle of Uhud, the army, the enemy, ran off the Muslims. The Muslims started running. Now, they knew not to run after the Muslims because the Muslims were not the problem. It was the Prophet who was the problem. When the Muslims started running, the enemies turned around. They saw the Prophet standing all alone. And they all started going towards him. Their mission was to kill him. Their mission was to take his life. But then you saw the stand the Prophet made. When the army moved towards him, just imagine this. They are moving with their weapons. They are moving with their swords. And they are moving with the intention to kill him. But the witness was the sky and the earth of Uhud. And the angels who watched the Prophet. Not one half a step did the Prophet take backwards. He stood there, his feet firmly planted on the ground. There was no wavering in his feet. There was no shaking in his hands. Not one time did his hand go towards his sword. Not one time did his hands move upwards. There was no fidgeting in his fingers. His demeanor that they saw was such that his face was calm. His eyes were serene. His whole body was in a complete composure of calmness. And the army, as it moved towards him, the sun was so hot that the army, that the enemy, they were sweating. But you see, it is said that not a bead of sweat came on the forehead of the Prophet. And he stood there in such a calm way that the enemy was shocked, that why isn't he afraid? Why is there no shaking in his confidence? The whole enemy is around him now. They come close to him. But you see, this greatness of the Prophet's stand, this stand of greatness was seen by the Prophet to such an extent. The few who saw him, they said, if the Prophet, looking at him, inspired them to say, let's go and defend him. The first one to reach there was Ali. But even before Ali reached there, it was the Prophet who made this majestic stand. When he made that stand, that inspired the few to such an extent. This inspiration came at the great stand of the Prophet. Muslims When we speak of Uhud, we say about Ali and what Ali did. Right? We rarely speak about what the Prophet did in the Battle of Uhud. When you saw what the Prophet did in the Battle of Uhud, then you would know what greatness is the stand of the Prophet, what was the height of his faith, what kind of courage he had shown. This was shown in Uhud. We saw that greatness, and the Muslims would have seen it if they had stayed a little longer. But what can I say? That the Prophet's greatness is only shown when the going gets so tough and everyone starts running. That's when the courage of the Prophet starts being shown to the world. Understand this. This was the Prophet. So when he came inside, when Imam Ali came there to defend him, and he reached there first, and he pushed the army back. You see, understand this, brothers. The Prophet asked him a question. He said, "Ya Ali, why didn't you run away with the rest of them?" He asked him a question. "Why didn't you run away with the rest of them?" Ali replied back and said, "Akfaru ba'dal iman." He said, "Should I become a kafir after I had become a mu'min?" You see, running away, Prophet is asking about actions. And he's saying, "Why didn't you run away?" Imam Ali is saying, "It's because of my iman. I did not run away." In other words, weakness of iman is the reason why people run away. And so now, when he said this, Imam Ali did not stop at that. He said one more thing. And this is what I want you to understand. He said one more thing after he said this. At first he replied, "Do I become an infidel after I became a believer?" Then Imam Ali made a statement, and he says, "Innani ala uswatak." That Prophet, the reason I stayed behind is that I am following your example. It is you who made the stand. I am just doing what you have done before me. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So those who are leaders of Islam, those who are leaders from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they are the first ones who are ready to sacrifice their lives before their followers are. It is the Islam that is learned through kings and emperors who want others to go and sacrifice, not me. If I sacrifice, then what's the use of all this wealth I gained? This palace and the harem. All this is for what? If I die, I can't use it. I can't enjoy it. So let others die. Let my kingdom be saved. No, the way of the Prophet and his character and his Islam is that the leader would be the first one to sacrifice. You see that? He would be the first one to sacrifice. And let me give you an example of our time so that you understand this better. It's just I'm saying this. You know, it was in one of the speech of our leader. And our leader had said, Ayatollah Khamenei had said, that if no one is willing to go and give their lives for Islam, then let me be the first one. I will go before anyone else. You see, my brothers, those who follow the Islam of the Prophet and the Imams, they are ready to sacrifice before anyone else's. This is how you recognize and understand the Islam that came through the Prophets and the Imams. This is how you recognize it. Those who want others to go and sacrifice, and they themselves don't go, and they themselves are hiding and want to have their own wealth, obviously you know where they learned that Islam from. That came from the Islam of these rulers and these emperors who have ruled Islam in history. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Now you see, this is that first means of rulers and kings through whom Islam was understood. The next means through whom people understood Islam was through intellectuals, scholars, as they call them, hakim, wise men, thinkers, philosophers. They learned Islam through them. And their whole premise was that Islam is the deen of aql, is the religion of reasoning. And since we have aql, and since we have reasoning, then we should be able to know Islam without need of any prophet or imam saying anything. If Islam is the deen of aql, then it means that, you know, whatever comes to my aql is Islam. This is an important way, because this has become the prevalent way of understanding Islam today. And this has been throughout history, but right now, this has become the way to understand Islam. People understood Islam, now understand Islam. Why? Because they think this is Deenul Fitra. This is a religion of fitrat and nature. This is a religion of aql and reasoning. So, through our reasoning, we understand Islam. And we will know it. And we don't need to have someone inform us of it. We have aql and we can learn it. It's very easy. Islam is the deen of aql. So now, this, you see, many educated people, they fall under this category. They learn a few words in their lives or a few things in their lives. They read a few books in their lives. And now they start, instead of following Islam, they start to make Islam. We think this is Islam. No, that cannot be Islam. It doesn't make sense. This makes sense, so this is Islam. Now, who is going to explain to them that yes, Islam is a religion of reasoning, but it's not a product of your reasoning? See, understand it. Islam is the deen of aql, but it's not a product of your aql. If Islam was a product of your aql, then that other Muslim, why should he follow you? He has his own aql, so he'll make his own Islam. And that other Muslim, he has his own aql, his own reasoning, he makes his own Islam. It means that however many Muslims there are, that many Islam there will be. Understand this. That's what happened. Islam is not the product of your aql or reasoning. Islam is the product of him who has created the aql. That is where Islam came from. But now you see, this has become the thing that no, we just use our own aql and we will make Islam as we go along. This is another way. And they took Islam from intellectuals and thinkers, and they said, yes, look at this person. He said this. I believe in this. I follow this. It seems good. You see, this whole idea of this should be Islam. See, this is a dangerous phrase. This phrase I just mentioned, you know, this should be Islam. This should be Islam. Because my mind is saying it should be, so you're telling Allah, listen, this is Islam. Accept it or not. And Allah is trying to tell you, wait, Islam is my deen. Inna deena inda Allah al-Islam. Right? Islam is my religion. You're trying to tell me what Islam is. Or should I tell you what Islam is? So the job of Muslims is to do what? To accept Islam and practice it and follow it. not to make it. Not to be the maker of Islam, but actually be the follower of Islam. And the way of the Prophet was what? As he explained it, when we look at the character of that Islam that came through the Prophet, before he said, you were Muslims, he said, listen, before you are Muslims, let me declare this for you. Ana awwalul muslimin. I am the first one to submit to Allah. In other words, Islam means submission. Islam means to take your akal away and just to submit to Allah. So, then you can ask, what's the use of the akal? Akal means to understand the law, not to make it. Allah gave us the akal to understand His law. Allah gave the akal to understand Allah, to understand Islam, to comprehend it, not start making it. You see, this is the way. So now, these two I have mentioned, these two means I have mentioned. Now, the real discussion begins. As to where did these thinking come from? Where did this thinking come from? Because you see, everyone wants to use their own mind to understand Islam. Where did this come from? And if you have understood this introduction I gave, and from yesterday, now let me put these together and start the subject here. Send me a salawat. One more salawat. You know, Islam is the religion of Allah that came throughout history. And before the law of Islam came, there were two major laws that came before this. One that came through Musa, the other that came through Isa. Both the prophets of Allah. The one that came through Musa was in the shape of a book called Tawrat. The one that came through Jesus was in the shape of a book called Injil. Now, these laws that Allah had made, obviously, He also made Islam at the end. Now, these laws came through time. And now, when the Jews had their book, Tawrat, they understood this as the law of Allah. And in their time, it was relevant, and it was the Islam of the time. I mean, right now we call it Judaism, but the religion of Musa was Islam. Was the religion of Allah. Those who accepted Him, they salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Okay. If you all can move forward, inshallah, so those people in the back can move up. One more salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
So, when you look at the Jews and the Christians, and the laws and the books that they have, and the religions that they have, you see that the whole emphasis nowadays of their religion is upon worship. Is upon worship, ibadah. Right? Their whole emphasis is on worship. And when you ask them, well, what about life? About the life of this world? About organizing life? Organizing government? Economics? Interaction with others? Interrelationships? What about all that? Well, that is in the hands of people. That is in the hands of people. The emphasis is on worship and ibadah. Now, when you ask them for these answers, there's no answer in Torah or in Jil. Now, why is this? What was the reason behind this? There are some who say, well, you know, this is not the Torah that was there. For example, our people, Muslims, would justify that and say, this is not the Torah that was there, Torah has been changed. Or the Injil has been changed. Well, no. You see, this answer is incorrect. Even if the Torah that was revealed to Moses was here, it would not have the answers. Even if Injil that was revealed to Isa was here, it would not have the answer. You see, Allah sent Quran. The reason, the real answer, is that you see, every law Allah made for the time it was revealed. Every law was made for the time it was revealed. And the only law that is made forever is Islam. So the law that is made until the Day of Judgment, that must have all the answers for mankind until the Day of Judgment. So it's absurd to look in Injil for the issues that are being faced today. Because Injil was not meant for today. Torah was not meant for today. So then when the book was revealed to Moses, Allah knew that this book will be relevant till Injil comes. So the time period of Torah was until Injil is revealed. When Injil came, its time period was until the last book of Allah, the Quran, is revealed. So now, that was the limit of the time. You see, those laws had an expiration date. And when the time expired for Torah, it was at the time when Injil came. And the time for Injil expired when the time for Quran came. Quran has no expiration date. It came for mankind until the Day of Judgment. Now keep up with me on this. As I explain this to you, because this from here, we start our discussion. There was no expiration date in Allah's book, which is Quran. So now, when Quran has no expiration date, then it must contain all the answers that are needed for mankind until the Day of Judgment. So if you look in the Injil for answers, you can't find them. If you look in the Torah for answers, you can't find them. Their people also did not find them. They did not find them also. So now what happened with those religions? You see, when the expiration date passed for Torah, Allah meant Torah to go until Injil. When the expiration date passed, so in the view of Allah who sent that law is now irrelevant. But the people who followed that book, they kept it alive. You see, the time was expired. But they kept it alive. Injil's time expired when Quran was revealed. So when it was revealed, now in the view of Allah, that book is irrelevant. But now what happened? The followers of Injil kept it alive. So what does that mean? See, when something is expired, the law that was there was expired. So now what happened? The followers of Torah, which are the Jews, and the followers of Injil, which are the Christians, were faced with a problem. The issues that they are now facing, or they faced after the expiration date, were not discussed in their book. So now they looked at all these new issues, these new problems that are not addressed in Injil or Torah. Then they said, what do we do now? There's no answer for this in our book. There's no answer for this in this law. It wasn't meant to be. There's another law that's relevant. Do you understand this? So there was no answer in their book. When there was no answer in their book, what do you do now? Are you going to say that our book has become insignificant? Or it has become irrelevant? You can't do that. If you do that, it means what happens to our religion? All these places of worship we made, all these ways we made to collect money, on all the money that's coming in. If we say this is irrelevant, it's going to stop. Right? It's going to stop. So now what happened? They came up with a very nice solution. They came up with a very nice solution. And that, what was that? They said, you know, now we get it. Allah sent the Torah. That's what the Jews said. Allah sent the Torah. And the Christians said, Allah sent the Injil to show us how to worship. Injil is there and Torah is there to show us how to worship Him, how to do ibadat. Allah didn't mean our books to give the laws of how to live in this dunya. That's not why Injil came, that's not why Torah came. So now, what Allah wanted us to do is to make our own laws. Start making our own laws, because if you just say this is a book of worship, alright, I don't do worship all the time. I only go to worship once a week. What do I do the other 6 days? I have to live with people. I have to live in a state. I have to live in an organized life. There is interaction. There is business. There is economy. There is movement from one place to another. What are the laws that rule that? What are the rules that are going to govern that? Oh, Allah said, you all make. So those rules now came in the hands of people. Those rules came in the hands of people. They said, great, let's make the rules. Now they started making rules. Because of this deficiency in their books, now they had to make laws that are going to govern them in this life. That's the reason you have lawmaking institutions like the Congress and Parliament. The reason you have them is because there's a deficiency in the law that was revealed, because its expiration date has passed. It has become irrelevant to the issues that are being faced right now. Many things that, for example, we need to know about, like inheritance. What are the laws of inheritance? If I die with 6 children, what happens? Who's going to get what part of the wealth, of the inheritance? Who's going to make the rules for that? You see, this is where you see those laws did not cover. Now Islam covers that. Islam became relevant. Islam needs to have an answer, because that's the law that is there till the day of judgment. You see this? That's the law that is there till the day of judgment. Islam became that law. Now when Islam came, everything was running good until Islam came. When Islam came, now the worries started for them. What are we going to do as opposed to Islam? Because Islam came for the rest of eternity until the day of judgment. And the book is complete. It has all the laws that man needs. And every Muslim knows this. La rabbin wa la yabisin, there's no wet or dry. Except that it's in a book. And the Quran addresses all the answers. So now the problem came. Okay, we have a problem now. What do we do with Islam? What do we do with Islam? Because in our religion, we rule the state. We rule the markets. We rule the streets. See, my children also, I want them to understand. the Jews and the Christians, they said that God gave this book so that we can learn how to build our relationship with Him, not to live our life here. To live our life here, we make our own laws. So when we made the laws here, so now who rules the streets? We do. Who rules the markets? We do. Who rules the state? We do. Who rules the church? God does. So now what happened? They limited God to the church. They limited God to the synagogue. And outside the synagogue, it's our rule. We make the laws. We will do what we want. Now when Islam came, now they had a problem. Okay, their book, or the book of the Prophet that he brought, addresses all the problems. Now how do we change that? You see, one of the issues they had with the Prophet was just this. This is what the ayat of the Quran says. When the Prophet came, you see, their mentality was that religion should be in the church, in the synagogue, not on the streets, not in the markets. So when the Prophet came, the first issue they raised with him was, مَا لِهَذَا Rasul? What is the problem with this Prophet? يَأْكُلُ التَّوَامُ وَيَمْشْتِي فُي الْأَسْوَاقِ That he walks in the markets. The markets is not the place of the Prophet. The masjid is the place of the Prophet. We should be walking in the markets. See, understand this. The problem they raised, the issue they raised was that they could not understand why the Prophet is in the streets and in the markets. He shouldn't be in the markets. He should be there because God is there. The rule of God is there, not in the markets. But when Islam came, Islam said, no, Islam is a religion for all things, whether it's the state, whether it's politics, whether it's ibadat, whether it's anything. Allah has an answer for mankind for all the aspects of his life. For all the aspects, Allah has the answer. So now when Islam came, there was a problem now. There was an issue now with these people. Now what they do? They said, all right, if we tell the Muslims, you know, your book is deficient, Muslims won't go for that. You know, Muslims won't go for that. So they came and they said, listen, here is the issue. Your Prophet had two parts in his life. His life is divided into two sections, two distinct sections. One was the work he did for Allah that is related to worship and ibadat. And one in which he was an administrator and administered over the people. So his administration, his politics was his own. It wasn't Allah's. His ibadat and worship, this was Allah's. So now you should trust the Prophet when he speaks of ibadat and worship. And you should understand that his policies, his administration, his interaction with others, this is not from Allah, this is from himself, so you don't have to follow that. What they did is not divide the Quran, but divide the character of the Prophet into two things. One that's related to revelation, and the other that's not related to revelation. This is what they did. Now, Muslims may like it or not, but the people who wanted power liked it. You know, there are always those people who want power. And those people liked it. They said, this is a great solution. This is a great solution. Why? Because now, in Christianity and Judaism, God is limited to the church and synagogue. So everywhere else, it's our will. It's our choice. It's what we say that happens. But in Islam, we just have to listen. We just have to listen. There's no opportunity for us to do our own thing. So now by dividing the character of the Prophet into ibadat and politics, they said the Prophet in ibadat He must be followed. But in politics, he doesn't have to be followed. This is the reason they did not leave the prayer of the Prophet. They did not leave the fasting of the Prophet. They did not leave the Hajj of the Prophet or the Zakat or all the other things that came. But what they did leave was the one that the Prophet appointed to lead the people. So in that way, they accepted his ibadat, but they did not accept his politics. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And now they created that opportunity, that window, where now they can say that yes, we can now enforce our own will and our own aql, and we have a place to use our own aql. You see, this is how people made it such that now they can use their aql to interfere in the religion of Allah. They came to this way and they came around this way and they divided the life of the Prophet. And they accepted that which he gave in worship, but did not accept that which he gave in terms of administration and politics. And when they came down, they said, well, alhamdulillah, this gives us the opportunity to rule over the people. And this gives us the opportunity for us to use our aql also. You see, we have an aql. Allah should make us use our aql. You know? And here, because of the lack of time, I'm going to stop and inshallah we'll go on with this tomorrow. But just one last thing I'll say. Now what happened? Now those people who learned Islam and who understood Islam through these kings and rulers, they understood that in ibadat you do whatever the Prophet did, just do it. But in the realm of politics, in the realm of the state, in the realm of administration, Prophet did not have anything to do with this. We need to use our own mind and we need to use our own choice to make the decisions for Islam. This is how they brought the interference of aql into Islam. And Islam, because they said, well, what's the use of just obeying everything from the Prophet? If we just say yes, 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 then what's the use of this aql? What's the use of this aql? And the Prophet wanted someone, Islam wants someone who is going to submit to it no matter what the Prophet says and no matter what Allah is saying. Just submit to it and follow it. Be a Muslim. This, my brothers, is the way in which you see man started using aql. And there's a whole history behind it. Where did that come from? Where did the whole idea of aql came from? That also has a history. But let me not go there right now. Inshallah, we'll go into it tomorrow. But right now, I will say this much. That when you are looking for someone who submits, really, in all of Allah's creation, you know, His creation, when you look at all His creation, in this realm of creation, you see things that are sometimes wonderful, sometimes humorous, sometimes you see things that are horrific, scary, frightening, and sometimes you see things that are unique. Unique in so many ways. And one of those unique creation of Allah, you know, I mean, all of mankind, when we see all of mankind, you see there are people of different types. But when we see, sometimes we see someone really unique, someone who is just, he has changed the, you know, the norm to something that is truly different. Where someone just changes the whole rules of the game. Someone who just makes things different. And makes things such that it cannot be really prejudged. Something amazing happens. And you see, time and time again, man gets to witness this. Man gets to witness this amazing event, this amazing thing that happens. And one such thing that happened, and one such unique person that Allah created in a unique way and was destined for something unique that is unmatched in the history of mankind. Really, that creation of Allah was called Hur. Really, if you look at the creation of Hur, and if you see and just try to imagine the role that he played in the history of man, it is unlike anyone else, unlike anything else you would see. And you see unique things in Allah's creation, but this is something that he has given to mankind just to see and witness and just be, it's almost surreal to look at the history of Hur. And you see, no script could have been written that is as ingenious as the changing of Hur. And the role that he played also, you see, was a role that is unmatched. In no history of man can you see such a change. You know, and his name also, you know, a person's feats is what defines him. The name has nothing to do with the person. But in some sort of surreal way, his mother named him Hur. His mother named him Hur as if she knew what role he's going to play in the story of mankind. And it is this name that when Hussein said on Ashura that it is quite true that your mother named you Hur, which means free, which means someone who is free, a man who is free. He said, yes, anta hurrun fir dunya wal akhirah. He said, you are free in this dunya and in akhirah. For Imam Hussein to say that, it is something of a testimony to who this person was and what role he played. You see, Hur is the hero of this story, but the hero is not the leader of the good side. Actually, he is the leader of the evil army. And this leader of the army of Yazid, he was there in that position, that status that he held. And this Hur, now all of a sudden, on the night of Ashura, when he heard the noises of the children of Hussein shouting out, Alatash, Alatash. We are dying of thirst, we are dying of thirst. These children were crying in the tents of Hussein, and each cry was a dart in the heart of Hur. It was melting his heart in such a way that Hur was exasperating with frustration, and tears were flowing down his cheeks. It was as if there was a change happening to his heart, and his mind was going through this mortification, and there was a rage of doubts in his mind. And these doubts now slowly started to question themselves. And these questions now became knowledge, and that knowledge changed into certainty by morning. Hur was walking around in anxiousness when a friend of his asked, "Why do you look worried? If I had known any other man in this world, and if they said about his bravery, I would give you as an example. Why are you so afraid now?" That courageous Hur, the courage of Hur is going away, because courage doesn't come from within, but it comes from the stand that you take. And Hur understood that the stand that he is taking, there is no ground on which he could stand anymore. There was no ground that he could stand anymore, and that's why doubts now were changing to certainty. And Hur now was now changing from one side, and he was thinking of the other side. When his friend said, "So why are you afraid?" He said, "I am not afraid. I am just making a decision. I'm just making a decision." "Hur, what is the decision you're making?" "I am making a decision between hell and heaven. Hell and heaven is the decision I'm making. If I stay here, I get the dunya. I get the dunya. I know that I have this dunya, and I know that my name is there, my respect is there. But if I stay here and do not cross the lines and go to Hussein, I know that I can never reach that heaven whose master is Hussein. Whose master is Hussein, I can never reach that heaven, never reach that paradise. I cannot reach there." So that's now you see, Hur's heart was changed, Hur's mind was changed, the whole change was done. And in half a day's time, the change was so drastic that now you see the remarkable feat and the remarkable effect that Hussein had on Hur. That Hussein, who is the Jesus of love, has changed that murderer into a martyr in half a night. Now his journey was done and his creation was complete. Now that Hur had only the sun to rise so that he can go to Hussein and declare his faith before Hussein and his remorse and regret before Hussein. He went now on the day of Ashura when the morning came. Hur knew this was the journey you take. He went to Umar ibn Sa'd and he told Umar ibn Sa'd that, "I am leaving. Are you sure you are going to kill Hussein and you are going to fight with this man?" And Umar ibn Sa'd said, "Yes, we are going to fight with him. There is no way out of this." And then when he said that, he said, "Then I'm leaving. Let me go there." He said, "Why are you leaving?" And Hur replied back with his conscience and his decision that he had made that night and the change that had been effected by Hussein. He said, "I have chosen that promise Allah made in the hereafter over this dunya that I have here." And with that, he walked out with his son and his slave. He walked out. He got on the horse. Now, the decision he made that night was very easy. The decision he made the night before was easy for her, but the facing and going towards Hussein was a jihad for her. Now her jihad was to go towards that person and those children that he had brought into these consequences. How is Hur going to go there? Hur takes off his boots. He takes his boots off and hangs them on his neck. He lowers his shield. And as they ride, because this is a sign of remorse and regret, he rides towards Hussein. But then he realizes that what he had done and this whole situation was his responsibility. He held himself responsible. He put his head down and he said, I can't see this. I cannot see this. Tears are rolling down his eyes. And he tells his son, my son, tie my eyes so I cannot see this pain. I cannot bear to see what I'm going to happen. When his eyes are tied, then now as they move forward, there's some noise that is heard. He asks the son, what is that noise that is happening? They said, it is the children who are crying, Alataj, Alataj, there is no water for us. Please give us water, we are dying. When Hur hears that, he breaks down on his horse. He could not take it. He breaks down on the horse and starts to hit his head on the mane of the horse and said, what have I done? What have I done? And then when they go closer, then there's some commotion that is heard. And Hur asks his son, what is going on, my son? What is happening there? He said, there is someone who's coming out to meet you. There's someone who's coming out to meet you. He said, who is it? Tell me, who is it? He said, it looks like Abbas. Abul Fazl al-Abbas is coming out. And when he heard that, he knew that Imam Hussein has sent Abbas to see who's coming. Who goes closer? Abbas. Abbas says, Hussein is expecting you. Hur knew that the Imam of Truth knew why he is coming. But then just to see that Imam Hussein had sent Abbas, this was itself making Hur shake more than ever. Now, when he was coming closer, now his son addressed him and said, my father, he said, what happened, son? He said, now Ali Akbar is coming. He's coming forward to greet you. And Hur said, I cannot take this. Oh, the journey of Hur from falsehood to the truth. The journey of Hur from dunya to akhirat was so short, but yet so long for Hur. My brothers, understand this. When they went forward, when Hur went forward, now his son said, My father, can I tell you one more thing? He said, what is it, my son? He said, now Hussein has come out of the tent and he is coming forward to greet you. When Hur heard that, he fell off his horse. He fell off his horse. He got on his knees and he started to crawl on his knees. Imam Hussein came forward. Imam Hur jumped on his feet and said, my Mawla, forgive me, my master. Forgive me, for I have done you wrong. Forgive me, for I have done you wrong. Please ask Allah to forgive me. Please ask Allah to forgive me. I cannot take it. It's my fault I brought you here. Your children are thirsty because of me. Your life's in danger because of me. I am the one at fault. I am your sinner. Please forgive me. When Imam Hussein heard that, he said, Hur, Allah has forgiven you. I have forgiven you. And the Prophet has forgiven you. Come stand up, Hur. Come stand up. He said, Allah. How can I do this? With his head down, bowed down, stood in front of Hussein. Hussein touched the hand, he touched the shoulders of Hur and said, Hur, you are our guest, Hur. You have come as our guest. But Hur, what can I say to you? When you came as an enemy, we offered you water. Now you have come as a guest. We cannot even give you water. We cannot even give you water. Hur said, please, Master, do not put me to shame anymore. Please do not put me to shame anymore. Hur, I asked him, let me go to the battle before you do. All I ask of you is let me go there. He said, Hur, no, you are a guest. He said, no, Master, if there's one request I have from you, that is, if I am your guest, then ask, that's just answer just one request of a guest. He said, what is that? Before I go, send my son to the battle. Send my son to the battle. Imam Hussein looked at his son, who was a youngster, a young boy, a young lad. And when Imam Hussein saw him, he said, Hur, how can I do that? You are an old father. This is a young son. How can he go to the battle? You know, death is the only way out of this battle. He said, this is what I want. This is what I request. And Imam Hussein granted him that wish. Now, when the son, Hur came to his son and said, my son, you have come from a proud father and you have made your father proud. Son, I ask of you only one thing. I ask of you one thing, that now when you go, all the training I have given you, it was for this day, my son. It was for this day. Now I ask you, when you go to the battlefield, do not look back. Do not look back at us. Just go forward so I can say, this is my son who's fighting and this is my son who's giving his life. Now he puts the imamah on his son and says, go, my son, go to the battlefield. Now Hur's son is going towards the battlefield. As Hur's son goes towards the battlefield, he starts fighting. And after a courageous fight, he is surrounded by enemies. When the army surrounds him, now they start to hit him from every side. So many blows are hitting him. Every blow that hits him goes into his body. And as soon, and a little while, you see that son now starts to falter and starts to fall from his house. He gives his salam to Hussein. And then he says, my father, help me, my father. I'm leaving you. And he falls to the ground. Hur, in a frantic search, starts to go towards the battlefield. They tell Hussein, Hur is going towards the battlefield for his son. Hussein said, stop him from going. They stop Hur. And then Hur says, what happened? Why did you stop me? Then he said, Hussein had said that you have a young son, you're an old father. It's not right for you to go there. Hur, when he saw his son, he saw him take his last breath in the lap of Hussein. And Hussein said, Hur, how can you handle this? This is a young son and you are an old father. It's very hard for a father to see his son die. Mala, I ask you, you saved Hur from that tragedy. You saved Hur from going through that experience. But what about you, Hussein? Hussein, when Ali Akbar will die, you will be at his head and you will be carrying him back to Zainab and Umm Laila, who are holding him. سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيُّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ.